How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Bears fans, this is Take the North.
What's the reason, Duck? It's here.
With your hosts.
I love these guys.
Dan Wiederer.
The whole key to sustaining success in this league is to have quarterback play that is top tier and can consistently push you down those roads.
And Mark Grody.
We're allowed to, at this point, Bears fans are allowed to right now, dream big and predict what you want out of the season.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome in to the Take the North podcast. Dan Wiederer is off once again and in his place. If you are watching the video, you recognize the face, and if you don't, shame on you, because it is Dan McNeil. Let me get this straight. Let me make sure I have this right. Chicago sports radio titan, podcaster, and writer. I took that right from his brand new book, which I am now showing right here on the podcast, I Bear Witness by Dan McNeil. Danny Mac, what's happening, brother?
That's quite an introduction, Grody. I'll try to live up to just a little bit of that hype. But, you know, don't scold anybody who doesn't recognize my face. You got to keep in mind, you got a generation of sports radio listeners, people who hear Raheemy, Harrison, Grody several times a week, who have no idea who the hell Danny Mac is. I mean, I'm yesterday's news. I'm washed up. You know, that's okay. That's what I do now. When last time I did one of these, someone said Chicago radio legend. I said, you know what that means? It means you don't have a job when you're a legend. That's what it means.
So when you're washed up or you lose a job, there's two choices you have. You can either do a podcast or write a book. It would seem that you've accomplished both of those things. Congratulations.
Woo woo! Look at me.
When was the last time you did a radio show on the radio? I don't even remember. I can't keep track of you, buddy.
Does that include, well, Barstool wouldn't count. That's not terrestrial radio. I was on with Spiegel and the vacationing Dan Wiederer after Terry Bors passed away. But that wasn't hosting. That was in a guest capacity.
That's right. I remember Spiegs pretty much conducting the interview that day because of Terry Bors. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. The book is great, by the way, Dan. I feel like, again, I Bear Witness, you should read it. I recommend it. It's one of those books that I knew once I picked it up, I wouldn't stop. I finished this puppy in 2 days. I felt like it was written for me. I also feel like we could probably, and this is not hyperbole, we could probably, you and I, do an hour on every chapter of this book. The only complaint I had the entire time that I was reading the book is that when you were talking about former Bears linebacker Joe Kane and the Amish joke that he had made regarding the pandemic, that I wasn't mentioned. Do you realize that that was you and I that conducted that interview? And I thought it was one of the funnest, most hilarious interviews that I have ever been a part of, just riding the Danny Mac wave with you, because you were so nice to have, you had a choice in these things and you had me on and we had the laughing Joe Kane on. So that's my only complaint about the whole book.
Your point is noted, and I believe it was you who threw the bait in the water that made him tell the joke about Amish chicken, or where he wasn't about Amish chicken so much. And he asked if this was during the pandemic. I think this was late spring of 2020. And he said, do you think the Amish know we're in a pandemic? And it just broke us all up. But you're right. I did not give you attribution. And that's my bad. I feel terrible.
I am honestly okay with it. And I enjoyed every bit of reading it. As a matter of fact, I was sitting right here on this very couch when we did that. This was my pandemic station. There's so many different directions I can go with you regarding the book. I do want to ask you a few questions before we get to some Bears of Now questions that I have for you. But one thing that jumps out to me is the going back to the year 2018, and that is when, as you wrote, the Khalil Mack trade helped the Bears to manufacture one memorable season, which is a great way to put it, because that's what it was. It was a blast of a regular season. All the, you know, the Eddie Jackson-ness of it, the Kyle Fuller-ness of it, the Roquan Smith-ness of it, all of that. But I guess what this is leading up to, the reason that really resonated with me, because we talk about this a lot on the podcast, Weed Man and I do, is that there have been too many one-offs for this franchise. And you wrote about all of them. 1995. After 1995, they sucked. 2001, the next year, they sucked. 2018, the next year, they sucked. And here we are again, Dan. Last season was an absolute revelation. 11-6, you win a playoff game. Does this feel different than those past pop-up regular season type championship seasons for the Bears?
It does for me, because I have confidence in the headmaster, and I couldn't say that to be the case when Matt Nagy, who was the coach of the year after that 2018 season, I still didn't feel complete trust in the Bears head coach. I liked him. I liked him a hell of a lot as a guy, more so than this guy, Ben Johnson. Mm. But Ben Johnson gives me much more confidence in terms of how he calls a game. Nagy never, I never warmed up to that. So yes, because of the head coach and because of the quarterback, let's face it, we were playing with iron sulfide, fool's gold, when Mitch Trubisky led the Bears to a playoff season. He had one good game that year. That was the game in Tampa. I think it was week six.
It was actually, I think, wasn't it at Soldier Field? That game? It was the six touchdown game?
Yeah, I thought that was on the road. But yeah, week five or week six, he had one big game.
Hold on, let me look it up in the book here real quick. Let me see.
And we all got so caught up in Cody Parkey after the double doink. What was lost in the shuffle, and I was guilty of this too at the time, is not paying enough attention to yet another terrible first half by Mitch Trubisky in that playoff loss to Philadelphia. And I don't want to go over every Bears stumble in franchise history, but, you know, in reflecting on that 18 season, because most of our listeners will remember that, I have much more confidence in this group. So, no, it feels much different for me.
Yeah, they've got the quarterback and the coach, which is something that in my lifetime, except for the 1980s, which is like the ultimate exception for all things Bears, is the first time since then, Ditka and McMahon, that they actually have the most important connection really in football, right? I mean, the quarterback and the coach is do you think this is, you know, that 1 year, I get it. I'm trying to keep perspective on it all. Does Ben Johnson feel like the best coach since Mike Ditka?
Yes, because of the manner in which he handles the offense. And I think he's got a much better handle on today's young athletes than previous head coaches with the Bears. And you can go down the list, and his players played hard for him, especially defensively, talking about Lovie Smith. But you go down the line, I think Ben Johnson finds a way to be much more relatable to his young players than all of his predecessors. I mean, you were on the sideline for the John Fox 3-year era and Mark with a C Trestman, and you saw all that magic. And the terrible general manager, too, in Phil Emery. He set the franchise back a decade. So it's been a mess. But I like this group. What this group is missing is a bona fide pass rush stud. And I put up the buyer beware sign when they traded for Montez Sweat, and I'll stand by it.
Okay, well, let's go there. It was in October of 2023. Montez Sweat traded to the Bears for a second-round pick. He then gets the contract extension, 4 years, $98 million. In 2023, between Washington and the Bears, he had 12 and a half sacks. 2024, bad year, 5.5 sacks. I mean, he showed up on the injury report every week, so I don't know if he was ever actually healthy that year. Last year, he gets back to double-digit sacks. Why don't you like Montez Sweat?
He's overpaid, and it's not his fault. you know, and I question the chronology of how that trade went down with Washington. Ditkaism noted. Thank you. Get as many of those in as you can. They made the trade before they agreed to a contract. If you remember how that shook out, the contract wasn't announced for a good several days after they made the deal. Now, I'd like to put all the faith in the world in the Bears. Well, they already had agreed to the number and terms. They just hadn't signed the document. But based on history, why would you trust the Bears administratively? Sweat could have had a gun to their head because the deal was done. They were on the hook to pay him a new deal, and what they did was overpay. I believe at the time, Montez was the sixth or seventh highest paid pass rusher in the league. And there's no way he's come even close to justifying that. I mean, even during that first year, what you mentioned, he couldn't stay on the field because of a foot. I think he fell out of shape, which is going to happen when you can't run very well. He's always the guy with the hands on the hips, two or three snaps into a series, you know, hand in the air, looking to the sideline. He played in 73% of the Bears' defensive snaps last year. Grody, that was his career high. Look at the elites and see their snap percentage counts. And you will find Myles Garrett. Now, Garrett is one of the best who's ever done it. He's a Hall of Fame lock. But you look at the guys who make a difference, even a Danielle Hunter, who when he was in the Bears division, Bears fans remember him well. He would play 83, 85% of the snaps. Sweat just doesn't stay on the field. And he only had 18 quarterback hits last year to go with 10 sacks. They need more. And I don't know if they've got it in some recent draft picks who have showed a little bit of potential, but it's unfortunate that they're still hanging on to that that big contract with Sweat because he's not earning it.
Did they screw up 2 years ago? Because I don't know how you felt about it when they signed Dio Dangbo, who had been just a projection because based on what he had done in Indianapolis. They brought in Grady Jarrett a couple of years ago. I think this was 3 years ago now, but Austin Booker was drafted, but particularly the free agents that they signed at the time. How'd you feel about Odangbo and I guess Grady Jarrett specifically?
I loved Jarrett several years earlier. Grady Jarrett, I don't know if a lot of people know this, shares a very cool distinction with Reggie White. You know what that is? Three sacks in a Super Bowl. He got Tom Brady three times when Falcons lost to the Patriots. And Reggie White previously was the only guy who'd accomplished that. Grady Jarrett's got too many miles on him. And I thought the cat from Indianapolis, whose name I give you credit all the time because you learn these names.
Odangbo,
you've always been that guy for all of us to go to.
I gotta have something, Danny. You get all the praise and glory. I gotta have the leftovers. I gotta have a special skill.
Take what you can get.
Yours is great sports talk. Mine is pronunciations.
Yeah, well, you know what? You take what you can get, highlight your attributes.
That's right.
I mean, ever since Brendan Ian Badejo arrived on the shores of Lake Michigan.
You just keep to Paul Grassmanis. You'll be fine.
Paul Grassmanis. Yeah. I think he threw his wife off a roof once, grabbed her by the hair and threw his wife off a roof. I seem to remember Doug Buffone and I having a – yeah, I'm sorry. I digress.
No, I'm sorry for bringing the name. I forgot that it's no longer cool to mention Paul Grassmanis because of that not cool thing right there.
Yeah, that was cool. And I'm sorry I brought it up. But Sky Point to Doug Buffone. I miss him every day.
Amen. And hey, if it's all these names that we're mentioning right now, all in the book. That's why Grassmanis is at the top of my head right now. I think somewhere along the line, you mentioned him in the book. There's a whole chapter of Doug Buffone-ness. And then sticking with you're hard on defensive ends, edge rushers with the Bears. And I like that about you because you were tough on Khalil Mack. Did you like Julius Peppers? Like. Because he never.
I like Peppers more now than I ever did when he was a player because I watched Khalil Mack for 4 years in town and he never amounted to the same player except for one great year out of four. that you got from Peppers. Peppers made some of the most amazing athletic plays I ever have seen in a football game. And, you know, maybe there's times when, because of body language, and again, he was an angular guy, taller, looked like a basketball player, you thought where he was dog, had that Richard Dent type, you know, that gait, that's, you know, whoa, la, la, la. Just, you know, maybe that was part of it. But yeah, and Peppers is another guy. He stayed on the field. He was always on the field, and he forced fumbles, and he played the run, and he had quarterback. He played in coverage. I never will forget that bat and diving interception he had at Carolina in a game the Bears stole on defense. I think Charles Tillman had a ball punch and a scoop and score in that game too. But yeah, I am tough on defensive ends who get paid the most, because they get paid the most. They have to rack the quarterback, and they have to do it consistently. One sack every 3 or 4 weeks doesn't cut it when you're among the top 10 paid defensive ends.
No, that's true. And there's probably a lot of people that are pumping their fists right now and saying, yeah, absolutely. And you know, Montez Sweat has been an absolute lightning rod. One more thing about the Bears defense right now, because it is the area. Like it feels like we're in a very, very strange place with the Bears football that you and I have watched most of our lives. This is the first time in a long time that I can remember, except for maybe some of those Mel Tucker defenses, that the Bears defense is way more suspect than the Bears offense. And the Bears have done, they've done some things with their defense in this offseason, like Neville Gallimore. Obviously, they drafted a cornerback as well, and they drafted a defensive lineman too, but they just didn't do much. Were you surprised that the Bears did not draft an edge rusher going into the season? And are we just basing the defense this year on, let's hope they get better, let's hope that they can coach them up and that they live up to you know, their potential here? I mean, how do you look at that?
Yeah, they are iffy defensively. And some of the highest paid players on the Bears defense are iffy, including Jalen Johnson in my world. Again, when you're paid up here among the top at your position, you have to play like that. And I know JJ and others who defend him have stated, well, interceptions aren't his thing. You're a cornerback. Interceptions have to be a part of your game. And people say, well, they throw the other way. They always throw the other way. They threw the other way when Deion Sanders played in the NFL, when Champ Bailey was in the NFL. Other cornerbacks have been avoided and still managed to accrue 50 career interceptions or more. This guy's going to have to play until he's 80 if he's ever going to get to 50.
Well, what's wild is it feels like, because he's been through multiple regimes, it feels like he'd be 30. Jalen Johnson is 27, and you're right. March of 2024, he signed a 4-year, $76 million deal. Do you look at – did last year scare you? Because he played in 7 games, and when he did play, he was essentially admitted to us, usually when I would be in there in the locker room, saying, like, he's playing injured. It freaked me out a little bit, though, watching him, because it gave us a glimpse of, boy, if that'd be 33-year-old Jalen Johnson. He just was not an effective cornerback last year. How do you feel about him going into this year?
You know – show me, and I don't mean show me the money, as the mechanic he did after his big two interception game against a quit already on Josh McDaniels Raiders team a few years ago early in the season. I think the Bears were 1-3 going into that game, and they beat, or maybe 0-3, and they beat the Vegas Raiders. And I'm not a Jalen Johnson guy. And again, when you make all that dough, you've got to prove it. You've got to do it consistently. That said, he's a veteran, and he's gonna have to get some help. And I don't know where they're gonna shake out at linebacker. I don't have a ton of faith in their linebackers, and that's a problem too, because of what's in front of them. Is what's in front of them going to be good enough? I don't know.
Yeah, Devin Bush. I mean, he comes in here this year, so hopefully, you know, that's the TJ Edwards, who was injured a lot of last year, and he's not getting any younger. It was nice, though, Danny Mac, to see Jack Sanborn get another shot with the Bears. Let's be honest about that.
Those undrafted guys out of Wisconsin, I'm telling you, they ought to get more. Yeah, the opposite of Gabe Kareemi, a first-round pick.
Oh, man. You and I have always shared a fondness, I think, of linebackers back to the days of, obviously, Wilbur Marshall and Otis Wilson and Mike Singletary and then, you know, Brian Urlacher through the years. And I guess Urlacher, Jonathan Bostic, of course. I love that you mentioned Jonathan Bostic in your book because he was like a preseason hero, wasn't he?
Oh, he had one of the greatest hits in Bears August history. Yes.
That's your next book, man.
It was like Myron Baker returning an interception for a touchdown for Wani in a preseason win against Indy in Dave's first or second year here.
Oh, you got your next book of lists, I think, Danny Mac.
No, more lists.
No. I think maybe you and I collaborate on a preseason heroes book or one hit wonders book, like a Brock Forsey, something, you know, players like that who people forget.
I'm in.
Okay. We will make I'm that in. Happen. Okay.
We will All call right. them the one hit wonders and we'll sell one copy in every village.
Here is what the direction I want to go, because I got this from right here from your book. There it is. I bear witness in one of the photo sections. You had there was a Brian Urlacher thing. And in your little capsule, you pondered, or you said, you know, Brian Urlacher, best Bears defensive player ever, ? Now, you didn't state that. I want to be very clear. You're speaking my language when you say that, because Brian Urlacher has become my favorite Bears player of all time, which is hard to do because I'm erasing a lot of 80s Bears when I say that. Make your case for Brian Urlacher to be the greatest Bears defensive player of all time.
The Recap Show is an inside look for fans into the world of global soccer, women's sports, and all things gal culture.
From the inside perspective of two World Cup champions and Olympians.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
He revolutionized the position in Lovie's Tampa 2 defense when they were able to take a guy who was 6'4", 250, and drop him 20 yards to 30 yards behind the line of scrimmage to play deep center field. And for him to play with the ball skills with which he played, I get excited. I get goosebumpy just thinking about some of the things Urlacher could do and how swivel his hips were. I've never seen a linebacker, period, regardless of his build, be able to turn as quickly and shift his body as nimbly as Urlacher did. And he wasn't great against the run head on in the middle because he was at a tremendous disadvantage at 6'4". Didn't get under the pads of opposing fullbacks as much as you'd have liked him to. But he did everything exceptionally. There was almost nothing he couldn't do on a football field, and especially with the ball in his hands. And I saw him turn so many games around and will that team to victories. The game against the Cardinals in 0-6 on Monday Night Football, man, when they turned that sure loss into a win via Hester, Mike Brown, and Urlacher. Yeah, Brian did it in an era where it was much more difficult, too. And I always get into this debate with the Butkus fans of the world. I'm sorry, the game changed when artificial surfaces and black running backs became more apparent. Now, if you want to say that Butkus was as badass as anybody because he threw around Dave Osborne and Bill Brown of the Vikings, two lumbering white guys, have at it. And maybe Butkus could have played in any era. And Butkus was a mean son of a bitch. No one's going to deny that. He sold the game as a defensive player. A defensive fan, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But the game changed radically when we got to the mid-70s and artificial surfaces and faster football became part of it. And the AFL's influence on the NFC finally took hold. They started throwing the ball a little bit, finally. And that's another thing George Halas loved. He loved to hate the AFL because it challenged his position off. It threatened how he earned a living. Oh, it was something new, and he did not want to learn anything new after he turned 50.
No, don't do that. Don't do that. I mean, I think we all have a little bit of trouble trying to learn things after the age of 50. But no, you would never want that to happen. But yeah, no, I'll tell you what. I don't know if I've told this story to you. I know I've told it on the score before. The only time I can ever remember calling the score was during Urlacher's rookie year when he was playing with, was it Warwick Holdman? And who was the other linebacker? The guy
Roosevelt Colvin from Purdue.
Yeah, right. He went on to New England and had a really nice career, but he could get to the quarterback, and you know, at that time didn't really know what Urlacher was. But I just remember watching him from the south end zone, and you know, about seven or eight old styles in, as I would be at that time, of course, Danny Back. And
Crocked.
I love you, man. Crocked indeed. Yeah, let's be real. Probably about 14 beers in, because there was the 3-hour tailgate before the game, of course. But watching that man go sideline to sideline, I think it was a Minnesota game, and like to be able to watch that from the stands, because it's really something you have to be able to see the whole field for, and just zeroing in on him. I couldn't help myself. I was doing some work at the score, but I didn't feel like anybody knew who the hell I was. And so I called Doug Buffone, and Doug Buffone and I talked about Urlacher with me about 14 old styles in, whenever that was, in 2001 or 02 or whatever it was. One of the great memories of my score life.
Do you still have the air check?
I do not. I don't. I could probably we'll have to probably try to get Chris Tannehill to hunt that down. That would be a ball to have.
Yeah. See if Bruce Levine still has his Marantz cassette recorder he can borrow. Dump it off of that.
Actually, my only other great memory of calling to a radio station was to call, "How you doing, everybody?" the Chet Kopick show back in the day, when you, Dan McNeil, were the executive producer of the show, and you guys were giving away Kopick on sports hats, but you would make the callers have to do something, maybe trivia, to have to get the cap. I called in, Kopick asks me to sing the Chicago Bears fight song, which I got through like one verse, and I wasn't able to complete the rest. I was botching the words, and Kopick was like, "Not going to happen, partner. Sorry, can't give you the cap. You weren't able to get it right." And you, Danny Mac, jump on the microphone. You don't know me. I'm in high school at the time. You're a young Danny Mac, too. And you go, "Come on, Chet. Give the kid a cap."
How about that? Look at me giving away those cheap five-panel hats that probably cost the station $1.99. They had a lot of color in them, though. They were very colorful hats.
Yeah. It was one of the weirdest, worst baseball caps I ever owned. It was unwearable because of
You tried to sing Bear Down. I'm disappointed in you that you botched it, but
anxiety, Mac. It was on the live radio when radio was radio. You know.
Well, and you hadn't reached puberty yet. In fairness to you, so you. You were intimidated. You had to sit around and wait for him to not challenge you for the next giveaway. "I don't want to know who led the 61 Blackhawks in scoring. All I'm looking for is caller 50.
Well, we'll do more of that when you finally write your radio book somewhere down the line. Quarterbacks, Dan, quarterbacks of the Chicago Bears. It was like reading the paragraph on all the Bears quarterbacks since the 80s, you know, dropping out Will Fuhrs and Dave Craigs and Brian Greasy's and Jonathan Quinn's and Matt Barkley. It's like, oh man, I'm going through the list one more time. Like, how many times have we done this extemporaneously on the radio? We're like, oh, let's do the list of bad Bears quarterbacks through the years. And something that I'll tie in with that was in your book, and we could talk about Caleb Williams as well, but you wrote about the disparity between the Bears and the Packers and how it's been very easy and very convenient for a lot of us, and I'm guilty, I've done it, to just say, well, the Packers have gotten lucky because they've had two of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, two elite quarterbacks, which we crave here in Chicago, Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. But Dan, tell us why that ain't all of it when it comes to the two organizations. And you could say maybe things have changed now, but historically, what's the real reason between the differences in the franchise?
I don't think we've hit the tipping point on whether things have changed. We'll see when the stadium deal finally gets settled, whether things have changed that much. And whether this coaching staff is as good as we want to believe it is. I think it's all organizational. It's the way the Packers have approached business for 30 plus years. We'll start this right around the time the score was born in early 1992 when Brett Favre was traded from Atlanta to Green Bay. That flipped the course of history, and it was more than just Favre. It was Mike Holmgren and general manager Ron Wolf, who is a Hall of Famer, by the way. There aren't many executives in football or in any sport who have earned their way to their Hall of Fame, but Wolf is, and the late Bob Harlan, my former agent's father, who was the vice president of the Packers, worked in concert together. And they reacted proactively before free agency. They already had shovels in the ground to build the Hudson Center 2 years before the NFL ruling that reversed the antitrust laws, or the antitrust ruling in the White versus the NFL case in 93. The Packers were ready for that. When they had athletes come to visit their campus, they were ready. The Bears had the bubble, and the Bears had 250 North Washington in 1993 when free agency started. And you know what the grand prizes were for the Bears when the Packers were getting Reggie White and Sean Jones, another complimentary pass rusher?
What?
The Bears got Joe Kane and Todd Berger.
Let's go.
Two guys I love having on the radio and hanging out with. I love smoking dubs with Todd Berger, going to Hawks games years ago. But not exactly a memorable free agent signing. The Bears just, you know, and it just has continued. And they, you know, and I know Packers fans too, they get mad at the organization because they don't draft enough receivers in the first round. So you didn't get Devontae Adams in the first round. You got him in the second round. Be happy. Don't be an idiot. When you look at the Packers receivers, what they have done historically compared to the Bears, this is where there's even a bigger disparity. Johnny Morris still holds the Bears' career receiving yards record with 5,000 and change. How many Packers do you think have more than 5,069 yards with the Green Bay Packers?
20.
It's not quite that high, but it's 14. Mm. 14 Packers receivers, and three times, there were guys whose careers overlapped each other, and they shared a lot of the fruit off the vines. Oh, it was it's just amazing. I have tight ends who've had more, you know, receiving yards, and we were all hopeful that DJ Moore was going to make Johnny Morris go away, or not go away, but fall to number two. That didn't happen. He's now gone. And the pressure is on Roma Dunze, who, had it not been for Caleb Williams being chosen eight slots ahead of him as the number one overall and the future of the franchise, he would have been barbecued these last 2 years. Mm-hmm. He's not been good.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Brathen, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Brathen wherever you get your podcasts.
He's not been consistent, I should say.
DJ Moore, you brought him up, and the trade of 2023, the Bears traded the first overall pick of the 2023 draft to Carolina for DJ Moore, the ninth overall pick, Roma Dunze, which turned into Roma Dunze. You get the ninth overall pick of 2023. Several other draft picks, including, of course, the 2024 first rounder, which turned out to be Caleb Williams. What's the legacy for DJ Moore? What's the legacy for that trade? Now that unfortunately, I guess, for the Bears, DJ Moore is off to Buffalo. What's the legacy, your opinion, on the whole DJ Moore thing, whether the trade or his ability on the field?
You mean that trade everybody on both the Score and ESPN 1000 said was going to leapfrog the Herschel Walker trade as the greatest trade in NFL history?
That's the one.
Everybody said that. All of you said that, correct?
Probably. I probably was guilty. I'm sure
I don't remember anybody. And Bernsey went as hard as anybody. Mr. Bears pompons. In case you didn't know, the Cowboys won 3 Super Bowls. A couple of those guys they got in the Herschel Walker trade are in the Hall of Fame. And people were saying the Bears beat them. Ryan Poles beat them with that trade with Aladdin. Actually, Ryan Poles is Aladdin. The genie was in Carolina, the Panthers GM, who gave away all those. Yeah, all that
Dave Tepper.
Yeah. He was a very generous guy to the Bears. But yeah, everyone said that trade was going to be so great. It wasn't so great, as it turns out. Now, is Caleb Williams, is he going to be? He may not be the player that all of us thought he was going to be and still be absolutely worth being a number one pick overall. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that, or is that having it both ways?
Well, you know, what I'm thinking about is if Caleb Williams is a good quarterback and he's here for the next 7 to 10 years or whatever as the Bears start, like once he gets his contract extension, isn't that worth the whole price of the trade? Like, doesn't that, you know, considering what we just talked about, reading through that whole list of names?
Yes.
Isn't it worthwhile? Like, isn't it
worth it? Yes. But is that where the bar is now? Worthwhile?
Well,
we went from Herschel Walker trade to isn't that trade worthwhile?
No, but Dan, half the theme of the book and what we're talking about is the Bears sucking at the quarterback position.
Yeah.
If you have like a good to potentially great, potentially elite quarterback, and I guess I'm answering the question myself, we have to wait and see, but will it not have all been worth it no matter what if you have your quarterback for the next 10 years?
Yeah, worth it. Yes, among the best trades ever. Not buying that for a second. And by the way, it was a little early to write off Bryce Young, wasn't it? And I wrote that before his second season, too. The people, he was in a terrible position. That Carolina franchise, they hired Frank Reich, who didn't want the quarterback. He didn't want Bryce Young. That marriage was terrible. Young got to training camp after just turning 21. They traded Christian McCaffrey. There was no talent on that team. Of course, he sucked as a first-year player. I think he's going to be okay.
We shall see. We shall find out. Dan, right now, you are sitting in Northwest Indiana. You've been in the region most of your life, right? Been living in the region. What the hell is going on with the Bears Stadium sitch? And would you be happy if the Bears were to move to Northwest Indiana? Tell me everything about the stadium situation from the mouth of Dan McNeil.
I love it. And it was about 3 months ago when civic pride really burst, into the next stratosphere here, when the Bears said, yeah, we're interested. We've had overtures and there's some optimism on that. I don't share that optimism. I think it still is Arlington Heights' ball to turn over. Whether they get across the goal line with it, another story. But I still make Arlington Heights the favorite. Northwest Indiana clearly is doing everything it can, as the governor, Mike Braun, is doing in Indianapolis, or as I like to say, downtown Indiana. It's and there was a development today, and I heard Layla Rahimi, your radio partner, and Marshall Harris talking about this on the Scores Midday show about Porter County, Indiana, saying, wait a minute, hold on a second here. Why should we get dinged for any of this? And those people are absolutely right. Porter County is a long way from the tip of Northwest Indiana where the Bears are going to reside. I mean, that is the absolute tip of Northwest Indiana. You don't get closer to Illinois than Wolf Lake. It's remarkable how close it is. It's like a par nine, you know? It's,
but people, it's when they hear Indiana, they hear Indiana, right? That then they think they're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and it's, you know, you can get, as you know, you can get from downtown to the Horseshoe Casino in Hammond, which is basically where the site is at, where the Bears are going to build, in 15 minutes. I mean, it's not bad, really. Cars are an amazing thing when you step on the accelerator and push down on it and they go 70. You can actually get 15 miles in 15 minutes.
So is there any nostalgia or romance involved in your thoughts of the Bears? Like so many people, obviously, Dan, we talk about this way too much on the Score, and we're all talking about it because it's like what we need to talk about. But are you like the Bears moving out of Illinois? Is that sinful for the charter franchise, the Chicago Bears?
No, it's not. You know, in a perfect world, the Giants and Jets play in New York City. The city's not set up to host them, so they have to go across the river and play in New Jersey. The Commanders don't play in Washington, D.C. They play in another state.
That's true.
The 49ers aren't in San Francisco. This is not uncommon. And as much as we've bitched about Soldier Field over the years, and when I say we, I mean as a city, not you and me necessarily personally, but that should not be overweighed by the fact that it's in another state. It's not that far, okay? Northwest Indiana is not that. I still just don't think it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen in Arlington Heights.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with you. I mean, it was like the second that Kevin Warren pivoted again a month ago or whatever it was, maybe not even a month ago, when he said that we are going ahead with our plans in Indiana. It was almost like simultaneously he's on the phone with Illinois legislators again saying, hey, you know, I know what I said that, but you know, it's still very possible that we have an opening in Illinois still. So I kind of tend to agree with you, because honestly, if it was going to be Indiana, it would have been Indiana already. I am already running out of time, and that bothers me. Dan, who's your favorite Bears player of all time? I think I know who it is, but you tell us, who's your favorite Bears player of all time?
Wow. Walter. Without hesitating, Walter. And since it's Chicago, I should be able to pick a linebacker too. I'm going Urlacher.
I love that.
Urlacher is more of a favorite Bear to me than Butkus, than Singletary, than even Hampton. It was just, I loved covering, and I covered all of Brian's career. I got to know him as a first-year player and hitched my wagon to him immediately on the Mac Yurko and Harry show. We weren't dummies, and it paid dividends because Brian and I still connect every now and again, and I will support him regardless of his political stances, unlike some Chicago fans. He never played for the Bears. He supports Trump. Okay.
Hey, I was all more right. Bothered by the fact in reading in your book here, I bear witness, that he maintains his Dallas Cowboys fandom. That hurt my heart just a little bit.
You should get him on the show and tell him that.
I'll tell him I know you, and he'll come on the show.
Yeah.
I would tell him that.
You should. Hey, thank you for thinking of me and getting me on Take the North. I listen to the podcast. You and Weider do a great job, and I enjoy hearing you on the midday show all the time. 104.3 is a godsend, especially in the city where you got tall buildings, or in the suburbs where you got high tension wires. I'm not interfered with anymore. I got a nice, clean FM signal.
It's real nice, isn't it? It's real nice. Thanks for saying those nice things. Thanks, Danny Mac, for coming on the Take the North podcast. I know Dan Weiderer was looking forward to it. I think his exact words were to me were, that's going to be great. So I think it was great. And this book is great. I bear witness. I assume you had a blast writing it. Was it a little hard to write it? I mean, there's some emotional stuff in here too, talking about that. You know, like I said, we haven't scratched the surface, but the Mongo stuff, you know, Walter Payton, as you talked about, there's a whole section on the Bears players that we've lost through the years. What was the process like? Is the last question I have for you.
It was exhausting. It was emotionally draining. I cried a lot of tears. I cried at length with Jared Payton during an interview I did with him. And, you know, I was with Steve McMichael during his illness a couple of times, and writing about that as his death was unfolding, it was very challenging. I wrote 101,000 words in less than 9 months, which is not advisable. And nor is the use of stimulants. And but if you are going to take Adderall, make sure it's prescription. Don't take anything off the street, because that could be tainted with fentanyl too. Make sure it's a scripted version and use with discretion. That's a dangerous product, but it did help me write the book.
Adderall greater than cocaine. Better drug, better stimulant, I would say, right, Danny?
Oh God, don't even mention the devil on earth.
That's the next chapter. That's the next podcast. Mac, thank you so much for coming on. Means a lot to me, man. You know how much I've loved you through the years and look up to you. And you are on the Mount Rushmore of talk show hosts in the great, big, beautiful city of Chicago. Thank you, Mac.
Bear down. Thank you.
For that guy, Dan McNeil, and you can see on the little graphic there, it looks like our executive producer, Adam Stasinski. But yeah, he put Damanaz is the way he wrote it up there. He is Dan McNeil. Adam Stasinski is our executive producer. I am Mark Grody of the Rahimi Harris and Grody Show, saying thank you so much for listening to and watching the Mighty Take the North podcast.
Thank you, everybody. The Bears.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.